I was sitting in on these model castings, and I remember the comments that would be made, you know, not only about their physical looks in terms of like their face and what they were wearing that day, but just literally about their bodies, like, oh, her hip bones were too big, or like, oh, the space in between her thighs wasn't wide enough. Oh, her shoulders weren't quite, they called it rail. They wanted something that looked more like a rail, and she had like too big of shoulders. And so it was very much like almost dehumanizing, because you're not even thinking about who's wearing it, but how to present the clothes in the best way so that it looks like it's on a hanger. That's why samples are made in a size 0 and a size 2, because it's supposed to not show the body. It's supposed to just look like it's hanging on a hanger. And that concept is just crazy to me. I'm Tamara Malice. I recently launched a plus-size women's wear collection.
This is Vanguard by Shopify Studios. It's a podcast about how people from unexplored subcultures and unexpected communities make money today. I'm your host, Anshuman Ithamsetti. According to a recent study, 68% of American women wear a size 14 or above, which puts them in the plus size or plus category, a fact ignored by most luxury brands, the kind that only operate in seasons or debut on a runway in Milan.
A lot of brands will design for a size 2 and then they size up to a 14, 16, 18. They're not necessarily fitting it on a 14, 16, 18, so once you're up in that size range, it kind of fits funny, and it is something that is going to continue to be a problem in terms of needing to fit on multiple sizes and making sure that it's going to fit that girl who's a 26, 28 in the same way that it's going to fit a 14, 16. I'm a 22, 24, but on some charts I'm a 26, 28, and on some charts I'm even a 30, 32.
Many brands that claim to be plus size or size inclusive often stop at a 16 or 18. Occasionally, a brand will announce clothes that go up to a size 22, but there's always a catch. The items are limited to basics, or they're just poorly made.
We need better clothing for bigger people. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. We deserve that as well. We just do.
To make matters worse, it often feels like brands include larger sizes just for the good PR. In our current moment, the plus market is saturated with brands vying for attention. But the truth is that the overwhelming majority of those plus brands are anything but. Which makes Tamara's mission to provide luxury clothing for sizes 26 to 32 so vital.
I'm not here to defend plus size bodies. I'm not here to explain that plus size bodies deserve a place in fashion. I already know that. We already know that. I'm literally just here making the clothes for like those cool girls.
Today on Vanguard, what do you do if your personal trauma stops you from realizing your full potential? How do you take that pain and use it to help others in your industry? If you ask Tamara where she gets her love of fashion, the answer is easy. Her mother, no question.
She would show me how to really properly be fixing things at an age before I understood what I was doing.
In fact, that's where many of her memories begin, with her mother's sewing tools.
One of my earliest would probably be the moment I discovered my mom's button box. She kept it in like a zipper bag. It was like a really special pouch, and she would collect all of the buttons from designer pieces that she had collected over the years. Something about that button box felt really magical, and of course it was kept very neatly and in a hidden cabinet. Something about the way they were kept and organized was almost more exciting than a candy jar to me.
As a child, Tamara would often hear stories of her mother as a young woman, challenging what society told her she could or couldn't wear.
She was always a rule breaker. She was the one, you know, in the Middle East wearing the high-waisted jeans before anyone else, and people would turn and look and say, what are you doing? And you're on the street and, you know, little crop tops.
And Tamara, she wanted to break the rules too, wear whatever she wanted. When she was a teen, she got her first designer item from a well-known fashion label.
And it was a denim skirt, and it had buttons down the front, and they were like these chunky black buttons, and I had never seen anything like it. And I think at the time, I was right above a size 10, and this is a designer size 10, so it's like really like an 8. And I just totally begged, and I was like, Mom, I need it. I have to have it. And she said, well, you know, if you lose weight and maybe eventually you'll fit. I was born in Atlanta, but my dad is Lebanese and my mom is Jordanian. My parents are first generation, so it very much was, you know, Arabic from day one, and those cultural differences definitely traveled here with them, and raising kids with certain expectations of traditional values, yet being in, you know, modern Western world was just a challenge for me and certainly a challenge for them.
And those challenges always came down to the same thing, Tamara's weight. Her mother began to enforce strict diet rules and carefully monitored what Tamara ate.
As great as my mom was about fashion and detail and clothing, she was also like a psycho about food. I felt so much hatred towards my body at like 6 and 7. And it was because my parents were always like, be careful, be careful, be careful, be careful, be careful. And I was like, I'm fine. Not only am I fine, I was a kid. So I was like, fuck off. Like, I'm going to eat whatever I want.
And that voice would follow Tamara for years to come. This might be hard to believe now, but back when Tamara was applying for college, she had no idea if fashion was what she wanted to do with her life.
I wanted to sort of explore the body more in terms of, you know, fashion and fabric. But I was also very into fibers at the time and very much into sculpture, anything three-dimensional.
She was curious about everything, so she found a school that would let her explore her ideas without having to declare a major right away. The School of the Art Institute of Chicago.
Our school really encouraged us to fool around and dip your toes into just about every type of media, from, you know, performance art to sculpture to fibers to, you know, fashion to photography. And so everyone was taking all sorts of classes. It's like everyone's doing weird shit, all the weirdos from all over, like in one place.
When it was time to decide whether she wanted to transfer into fashion, Tamara felt the pangs of a familiar anxiety.
I didn't really begin to gain weight and sort of identify as fat, if you will, until maybe my second year in college. So I heard this voice. It was just like, fashion, fashion, like you have to, like you're so passionate about it. Like it's, there's no question in my mind, but then all this fear and all this anxiety about no one's going to get it. Nobody else looks like you in the program. They're not going to accept you. They're not going to think you understand. I remember I worked really hard on that application and, of course, got in because they saw that I was really into it.
In the program, Tamara caught the attention of a professor with his own side hustle.
Him and his partner at the time had just started a line making things out of their basement in Chicago. And at the time, you know, no high-end fashion was coming from Chicago. So they kind of put Chicago on the map in that sense.
And from that moment, she was hooked.
No one else was interning in the middle of school. So that was something for me that I just thrived off of. Helping them with pattern making and small design changes and sewing muslins. And then that sort of developed into, all of a sudden, they had this, you know, beautiful line, and they were traveling twice a year back and forth for Fashion Week between Chicago and New York. Interning for them opened up a lot of other doors with people that they were working with. So their press office and their PR and their manufacturers and their factories all became, you know, contacts of mine and friends of mine.
A chance encounter at work led to a rare once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Tamara was invited to intern at Dazed and Confused, one of the most coveted magazines to work for in the world of fashion. Despite being quote-unquote just an intern, Tamara quickly made herself indispensable.
Outside of running the fashion closet, I would also be on set for photo shoots, assisting the editor of the magazine when, like, I went in there thinking I was just helping, like, one of the smaller editors, and suddenly I'm, like, on set with the creative director. Like, it was just such high level of, I just knew what to do. I wasn't that nervous about it. It was very much more responsibility than I thought I was gonna have.
Despite the quality of her work, it was clear they didn't have the budget to take her on full time. She wasn't even sure if Dazed was the right fit for her.
I was very much sort of ready to get back to New York and figure out what my next step was, because I loved styling and I loved assisting at the magazine, but my heart was still sort of in design and in development.
Back home, Tamara's professor still needed her skills, so she moved to New York to oversee their efforts at Fashion Week.
At that time, I had definitely gained a significant amount of weight, and I certainly wasn't comfortable with the word fat back then, but I was what we would call fat now.
Tamara was working behind the scenes at one of the most important events in fashion. This meant she got to witness firsthand the constant fat phobia and body shaming that the industry was always known for.
Oh, her hip bones were too big, or like, oh, the space in between her thighs wasn't wide enough. I felt like I was quite literally the elephant in the room. So it was like people would be talking about this stuff and I'd be there, and there was no sort of like empathy there. It's like when you're talking about how much you hate your body and how fat you are, and you're a size 00 model, and you're sitting next to me, what does that say to me? It bothered me that it was like I was going to work and dealing with all this noise. I was like, I already have the noise in my own head, and now I have to go to work and listen to all of their noise.
She was already burning out after working Fashion Week after Fashion Week after Fashion Week.
There was never any time for yourself. There was never time for lunch. There was never time for a break. There was never time for you being upset. There was never time for, you know, an emotional breakdown. You had to just keep going. And after a while, that was just quite literally too much for me to handle.
That's when the dam broke.
I felt like I couldn't really grow any further in that position, and left and didn't tell my parents at the time. And fell into like a sort of dark place with food and self-control and anxiety and not really knowing, you know, what my next step was, because I was heartbroken leaving that position. Even though I wanted to, it also felt like it wasn't my choice. Like, it felt like, but I thought this was what I was going to do forever. You know, I thought fashion was it for me. And it felt like no longer was that the case. It was like, how could I hide as much as possible? How can I not tell people what I'm going through as much as possible? How can I eat all of those feelings? How can I wake up and eat as much as possible and then go to bed and eat as much as possible? And then meanwhile, you're like feeling like shit about it, but like you can't really talk to anyone about it, and you're just kind of doing it in your own crazy cycle, trying to sort of self-medicate, and it's just getting more and more out of hand.
For the first time in her life, Tamara acknowledged that her upbringing had created a toxic relationship with food, one that prevented her from accepting her body. And this stretched back years.
My body was sort of calling out to me at that time, like quite literally, like, help me, respect me, feed me, take care of me. And so I finally told my parents. I left my job, and in that same conversation, I said to them, you know, I need help. Like, I'm struggling here. My day-to-day life is completely being driven by food.
She checked herself into a treatment facility for disordered eating.
I just felt so much disapproval from the industry, from people around me, from my parents, from myself, that I really needed to fight back at that. I said, I don't want this to be my reality. I'm going to make a new reality where I'm okay. I'm okay living exactly the way that I am in this body, literally exactly the way that I am, not like trying to suck in, not like with an Instagram filter, like just being seen.
Tamara met other women grappling with their own eating disorders. She began to open up about the pressure she faced to lose weight at an early age.
And it was like a funny epiphany moment where I was laying in bed either at night or in the morning, and something came over me, and it was like, wait a second, you don't have to listen to anyone. You don't have to gain weight or lose weight to be better, and you don't have to, like, transform your entire body before you can go out and buy a dress that feels good. What if you were just exactly the way that you were, and that was good enough?
Over time, Tamara began to embrace her fatness and how clothes looked on her. Even better, she started owning it.
Like, oh, it's a little short? Okay. Like, oh, this dress fits a little tighter on my belly? Like, okay, I'm okay with that now. And that shifted my view on plus size clothing, because I was like always coming from a place of like the words that people put out there, like flattering and slimming. I was looking for clothing that would sort of deceive others about what I might look like and kind of deceive myself.
Shortly after the treatment facility, Tamara attended her sister's wedding. It was full of family members she hadn't seen in years, aunties, uncles, and they all had the same question. What happens next?
Instead of kind of being like, oh, I don't really know what I'm working on, I'm in a weird middle space, I just found myself answering the first person who asked me, oh, I'm actually in the process of developing a plus-size fashion line. And they were like, oh, cool. And I was like, oh. And then I was like, oh my God, I said it out loud. What did I just say? I started telling everyone around me that that's what I was doing at this wedding. And I got back in town January 2018, and I just hit the ground running.
By now, Tamara knew what it took to get a luxury clothing line off the ground. She had gained so much experience between working for her professor and working at Dazed. But a luxury plus clothing line? That was a whole new world.
I knew that I wanted to connect to girls like me who were looking for things that I was looking for, meaning a higher quality product, not just the little black dresses, not just the sexy, let me show off my body stuff, but like tasteful, elegant, quality, unique statement pieces, because I didn't see them out there already.
Tamara knew what she wanted, but not how to get there. When it came to the nuances of plus, she was very much an outsider. But being an outsider has its benefits. And Tamara took the time she needed to become fluent in plus. Who were the influencers? What were the fads? In many ways, it felt like Tamara was back in school.
I spent months just watching other brands, reading other comments that people were posting on other brands, reading message boards about people all over corners of the world sort of commenting on what was already out there. And it was really important for me to be different than what was already out there. I'm not trying to just be another number.
Tamara spent a year studying the market, and she could identify problems that had escaped some of the biggest names in plus fashion.
I remember a brand, very popular brand, probably my biggest competitor, and they had announced that they were extending their size range. And then they announced, we're going up to a 32. And they announced it with a straight size model. I was like, come on. And as I'm scrolling and reading these comments, I remember it had over 1,000 comments, so I spent literally 2 hours reading them. And then a few weeks later, there was a post, now they're extending down to a 00. Now they're offering a 00 to a 32. Again, thousands of comments I'm reading through, and people were really angry. This was a place just for us. This was, you know, a plus-size brand that we were so excited about to support, and There were people saying things like, I wish I could take my money elsewhere, but I don't know where to take it. Sort of started to understand, yeah, there really is no one out there providing a product just for the plus market.
It occurred to her that many of the challenges of the plus ecosystem echoed the very same challenges she faced as a fat person living in spaces that privilege thin bodies. No one was willing to make fat women a priority.
Part of my research was also remembering my own experiences of shopping and how sad that feels and how excluded you feel and how you can't find something in a store. It was just important to offer a size range that felt inclusive, for lack of a better word, and to offer things where, oh, you want to size up because you want it to be roomy? Great. Or, oh, you want to size down because you prefer a tighter fit? Great. So I wanted to kind of have those options available to everyone and not sort of feel like I'm excluding people.
She began sourcing materials like llama knits and Japanese cotton, things rarely seen in plus. And thanks to the contacts she made working for her professor, she knew manufacturers who could make her clothes ethically. But Tamara's year of research and development was still very theoretical. The true test was getting her product in front of a plus audience. One of the most high-profile events for plus brands and influencers is CurvyCon. Think of it as New York Fashion Week for plus. It attracts the likes of Refinery 29, Glamour, and Vogue. If you're about to launch a new plus clothing line, CurvyCon is where you do it.
Basically, just took mental note and said, okay, so there's this thing that happens during September, during Fashion Week. It's called CurvyCon. It's not perfectly aligned with my branding vision, but it's perfectly aligned with my customer base.
When CurvyCon 2018 was on the horizon, Tamara jumped at the chance to be part of it, even if it meant showing up before her collection was ready.
I wasn't fully ready for sales yet, so this is in September. My production was not finished yet. During this two-day event, they have speakers and panels, and they have a fashion show, and they have a lot of pop-up shops from different brands, but there's not really any food or drink.
Seeing the opportunity in front of her, Tamara applied to be their official coffee sponsor. She would have a space in the lobby and provide coffee for the next 2 days.
I knew that it was just going to be samples hanging and that I wanted to create a really unique space for the clothes to live in and for this coffee to be served out of.
If you wanted to attend CurvyCon or just get a hit of caffeine, you had to first step into Tamara's, well, pop-up.
Right when you entered the space, I was in the lobby, and so nobody else was there. Everybody else was like in these back rooms where they had all these pop-up shops set up all next to each other, and I was sort of independently in the lobby. It felt like a Tamara Mellis event. I met hundreds of people and I was so overjoyed and also so exhausted by the end of it because it's such a crazy energy exchange, and was just like, wow, like I did everything I wanted to in 2 days and met everybody I wanted to in 2 days.
In November 2018, Tamara finally launched the first collection from her Luxury Plus clothing line.
Feeling Feelings, that title came from very much my feelings about my self-love journey and my feelings that were coming up during that self-love journey.
There are wide leg pants made of soft neoprene, sheer shirts the color of wine, oversized cardigans made of alpaca fiber. True to her word, each item in Feeling Feelings takes up space, demands it. They're a lot closer to sculpture.
It's not really linear. It's not really something that you might be able to follow exactly and be like, oh, you made that decision because this is related to that. It's not always like that. It's sort of a more intuitive, artistic process of kind of evoking a feeling.
And she has some big ideas for her upcoming collections.
definitely trying to push those boundaries a little further than I did for this first collection and really kind of show people what I'm trying to do, which is very much just allowing people to be seen and to not apologize for taking up space and to just own it.
As our chat was winding down, I brought up how in this moment of fast fashion, luxury clothing like hers was another way of making clothes that could potentially stand the test of time. Would we have a sewing kit or even that button box 5-10 years from now?
You know, the world we live in is changing and you don't necessarily keep every single shirt that a button falls off of. And for me, it's something that I actually still take pride in. When I go to a hotel and I see a sewing kit, it's something that I immediately hoard and I'll stuff it in my toiletry bag and be excited for when they're gonna leave me another one the next day. It says so much, like metaphorically, about like being able to like fix something with this cute little sewing kit. But the button box sort of represents more than just the button box. I think it represents curiosity and it represents childlike wonder, and it represents those very early memories where you're sort of mesmerized by something and you're really unsure why. I really think that that is the first inkling of feeling that we have about our futures. And I can't help but think that the button box definitely like led me to where I am.
Tamara Mallis is the maker of the Luxury Plus clothing line, Tamara Mallis. This episode was produced by Michelle McCallum, Katie Jensen, Emma Feddersen, and me, Anshrimini Dhamseti. Our score was composed by Jim Guthrie. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks. Oh, and before we go, here's a preview of our next episode.
I was on vacation in Florida in August, and I got a call from Fox News, and Fox News said, "Do you know that Sasquatch costume is yours?" I said, "What Sasquatch costume?"